A rematch in a race for public office is not that unusual, but a rematch is something different. This year marks the third straight election in which the race for Oregon's 4th Congressional District Representative features incumbent Democrat Peter DeFazio of Springfield and Republican challenger Art Robinson of Cave Junction. The 4th District covers much of our listening area on the Oregon side, stretching from Albany and Corvallis in the north to the California state line. So it includes Lane, Douglas, Coos, Curry, and most of Josephine County, although not Grants Pass. Both candidates accepted our invitations. Art Robinson joins us on October 17th. Representative Peter DeFazio joins us today. Representative DeFazio, thanks for joining us once again.
Thanks. Good morning.
So obviously Art Robinson and the people who vote against you think that 14 terms is enough. Why do you want another term in Congress?
Well, look, it's pretty darn dysfunctional, and I'll be the first to admit that. But it's dysfunctional because of the ultra-right-wing extremists, many of whom came in 2010, the so-called Tea Party folks, same people who shut down the government, forced to shut down. They even forced their own leadership against their wishes to shut down the government a year ago this week. And Art Robinson is part of that crowd. So we don't need more dysfunctional people there. I can still get some things done. We did a very important bill that contained provisions that I pioneered 6 years ago when the Democrats were in charge, Water Resources Development Act. That means we're going to start dredging the small harbors in Oregon again, which means safety and activity for sport and commercial fishing. Port Orford was going totally dry. And I got a trust fund established so we won't have those problems in the future. Did an important bill, bipartisan in the House, to rein in what are called patent trolls. These are groups, even hedge funds, are buying up incredibly vague patents and suing software innovators and others, alleging infringement. $29 billion was wasted on that. I partnered with the Republican chair of the Judiciary Committee on that. So I'm still able to work on some important issues despite the growing partisan divide, and there's more to be done. Really want to do a 21st century surface transportation plan for America, something that makes us more fuel efficient, that gets us out of congestion, gives people more alternatives, particularly in urban areas. And that's a work that I started on Obama's first term, and it's not done yet.
Well, surface transportation in particular always seems to be one that although everybody seems to vote for it in the end, it just seems to take a while to get things to the point of a vote. And yet it also seems to be also very highway-focused most of the time. Is there any movement in Congress with the current membership to head toward things that will provide more money for rail, for things other than highways?
Well, I wanted to do a true multimodal approach, and my idea was we would fund it by taxing oil by the barrel as it flowed into the refinery, which would mean that, right now a lot of the resistance is highway users that say, wait a minute, we pay all the tax, the 18.3 cents a gallon that goes to the federal government. Or the truckers say, wait a minute, we pay all the tax, the diesel tax that we pay. Well, if we taxed oil by the barrel, they couldn't make that argument anymore, and I think we could move much more toward a truly intermodal system. And my idea would be to use the most energy-efficient, cost-efficient solutions to our congestion problems, which many times could include enhanced rail or enhanced access through ports with multimodal centers to move off of ships onto either rail or trucks, whatever, depending on the distance and whatever's most efficient. So, those are things we could do. I've been fighting for them. The last time we did a major reauthorization, I was deeply involved in the fight for the split between transit and highways, and we managed to bump transit up a little bit, but nowhere near enough. We have a $65 or $70 billion backlog to bring existing transit systems up to a state of good repair, let alone give people more options and build out new ones. So that's very much a fight I want to be engaged in. And then I pioneered, along with Joe Kennedy many years ago, including alternate modes or enhancements, which were, pedestrian cycling, which had to be accommodated and considered in all new projects. Unfortunately, in the last two-year bill, the Republicans, killed off safe routes to schools and made enhancements, that is pedestrian cycling optional for the states. Now, in Oregon, that's not a problem. We're still going to do it, and we'll do it well. But in places like Texas, I think, I'm not going to be any money going in there.
The things that you talked about right off the bat, though, the Water Resources Development Act and the patent trolls, I mean, these are not insignificant things, but not the big sexy issues or the big issues that ultimately are going to determine what this country looks like in the future. Things like how we shore up Social Security and Medicare for the future. Is it just impossible in the current Congress, you think, to get those things done?
Well, I've been proposing a fix scored by the actuaries of Social Security since, I think, 1996. Which is pretty simple. You lift the cap, and that would give Social Security more resources than it needs into the foreseeable future to pay 100% of benefits. There are those on Wall Street and others who are just, you know, and people like my opponent Art Robinson, you say wanted to abolish Social Security, Medicare. Now he says, no, he didn't mean anything he said before or he wrote about. He's a candidate for Congress now. Now he wants to fix it. Well, but he also talks about making it optional. Well, making Social Security optional kills the program. So, you know, we need to continue the existing program. And if we lift the cap, we can pay 100% of benefits, essentially forever, so far as the actuaries can see. That would mean that a billionaire, someone who earns $1 billion on Wall Street next year, would pay the same percent of his or her income to Social Security that someone who earns $50,000 pays in today. We have a regressive system now. After $117,000, you don't pay anything into Social Security. And my bill obviously also caps the benefits, so the billionaires don't get phenomenal benefits out of Social Security. But tell you what, the way those people gamble on Wall Street, someday they may need what they consider an insignificant amount of money to survive.
Representative Peter DeFazio is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, running for re-election to Congress in the November election. Art Robinson in Cave Junction opposing him for the third straight election. You can join us with questions and comments at 800-838-3760 around the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Email address jx@jeffnet.org. Here is Dawn in Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Representative DeFazio.
Thank you very much. I'm Dawn Leslie. I recently ran for county commissioner in Lane County, and I'm very concerned. First I want to say I really appreciate your public service and dedication and efforts and successful efforts to protect wilderness over the years, Congressman DeFazio. I am very concerned that with the dysfunction of the timber discussion and the way I'm concerned that we are about one big forest fire in Western Oregon, we're about one big forest fire away from losing all political will and all ability to create to come to smart solutions, as you have championed in the past. Things like the fact that we can no longer send raw logs from federal lands unmilled. We can no longer sell them overseas. We have to process them in the United States. I'm curious your views on how we can create incentive programs or incentivize in some way effectively. Make it more attractive, less economically desirable to more attractive to mill privately logged timber here in the United States, hopefully in Western Oregon. Oregon timber should be processed in Oregon, and how can we keep it processed in Oregon? What are the good measures that we can enact to help encourage that local processing? And also, I was curious about your views on the proposed sale of the Elliott State Forest.
All right, so how do we provide incentives in Elliott State Forest? Dawn, thanks for that. Representative DeFazio?
Well, I was the House author of the ban on the export of federal logs back a number of many years ago with Bob Packwood, but Packwood would not support my efforts to also ban the export of private logs. We could have legally potentially done that back then.
Under a scarcity thing, I remember
Under the Constitution, there were those who would argue about it, but now that the U.S. has signed up for all these failed trade agreements that are exporting our jobs, our membership in the World Trade Organization prohibits the United States from restricting the export of any raw material, coal, timber, whatever, unless you can make a case that it's in critical short supply. I've actually, oddly enough, I partnered with Ron Paul the last time we had an opportunity to get out of the WTO. He and I offered a bill on the floor of the House, and we got, I think, 96 votes. These agreements are designed for and by multinational corporations to stick it to consumers, the environment, and every other issue they can think of that'll make them money. So that's a barrier, but there is a way to do it. It's a good question, Don. It can be done at the state level. We have a very low severance tax on the harvest of timber. That is set by the state of Oregon. You could raise that severance tax substantially and say, okay, this is really, really a low tax, so we're going to raise it. But we will have rebates if it's sold into processing here in Oregon. That would be both constitutionally and trade agreement illegal, so far as I and those people I've worked with can tell. I gave the idea to Paul Holvey, a state rep from Eugene. He introduced it in the last legislature, and I got to say, he got pretty lackluster support on it from environmental groups and of course, the industry. Those who don't process had big problems with it, but that would be the solution. That's a way to get that job done. Keep those logs home, get the value added, and get the jobs out of it.
What about your thoughts on the Elliott State Forest and the activity there?
I'm not an expert on the Elliott. That's a wholly a state issue, state owned. But I got to say, the Common School Fund can't afford to pay to have the Elliott State Forest, which it's doing right now. I mean, our schools are in pretty tough financial shape. There are people out there thinking of some interesting proposals about, very alternate management, maybe with, people purchasing conservation or other rights. But, again, I'm not an expert. I've just had casual conversations with a number of people. I think you'll see some proposals in the next couple of months.
The remarks you made a few moments ago about the free trade agreements, WTO, NAFTA, et cetera, I'm trying to figure out where that makes you on the spectrum of, for global economy and against global economy. I mean, so you're not for these free trade agreements, but, I mean, do you believe in globalization generally or what?
Well, look, I mean, we live in a global economy, but I'm not one who supports trade deals that are designed to allow capital and investment to chase the most exploited labor and the least restrictive environmental rules around the planet. I mean, it started with NAFTA. NAFTA had no environmental and labor provisions in it that were binding. At the last minute, Clinton phonied up a side agreement, non-binding labor and environmental agreements, and said, oh, we'll put them in NAFTA later. Well, guess what? 20 years later, they're not in the agreement. So initially, a bunch of multinational American firms fled south of the border to exploit the cheap labor down there, the fact that they can't organize labor unions, the fact that they can dump the stuff out the back door and poison people in the area, and they don't have to deal with the environmental issues. But then it got even worse after MFN for China and China joining the WTO with the support of the U.S. Then the jobs moved to China, where you can't even breathe the air anymore. So, we need well-designed trade agreements that require other countries to bring up their labor standards, to enforce, environmental standards. We could even include dealing with carbon pollution as part of future trade agreements and put a price on it and put a tariff on exports from places like China that is now the largest polluter in the world.
Peter DeFazio represents Oregon's 4th Congressional District in Congress. He's from Springfield. He's running for a 15th term in November's election. Facing Art Robinson, you can join us on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760 or 541-552-6782 or to send emails to jx@jeffnet.org. Gene in Grants Pass, thanks for waiting. Welcome to the Exchange.
Hi. One thing I would like to bring up is I remember watching on TV that Obama said he would not compromise with the Republicans, and it was his way or the highway, basically. Harry Reid said none of the Democrats will compromise. They will stand firm. And the Republicans sat around a table waiting for the Democrats to show up so that they could have a conference and compromise on what was wrong. So basically, Democrats shut down the government by refusing to compromise.
That's an interesting perspective.
I do not vote any particular party. I vote for the person.
All right. Thanks for that, Gene. Appreciate it. Peter DeFazio, your thoughts?
It's an interesting view of the world. John Boehner did not want to shut down the government. He happens to be the lead Republican in the House. And he was forced to do it by Tea Party, a rump group, about 40, 50 Republicans, that said, you don't do this, we'll take you out as Speaker. and will take out a bunch of your colleagues in primaries with money from the Koch brothers. And the Republicans, they did not sit around a table waiting for Democrats to come. They just said, they were the ones who said, you do what we want. And at that point, they were saying, you repeal Obamacare or we'll shut down the government. And if she thinks that was a reasonable position for them to take, she might talk to the 500,000 Oregonians who have health insurance this year who didn't have it last year. Her pretty darn happy about that, because if these people had had their way, the seniors would be falling into a donut hole, cost them all an average of $1,000 more a year for drugs. You would have tens of thousands of young people between ages 21 and 26 couldn't be on their parents' policies. You would have insurance companies taking away your policy when you got sick, so-called rescission. That's outlawed now. You would have insurance companies refusing to sell you a policy if you ever sneezed. That's outlawed now. She has a very interesting view of reality.
John and Eugene, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Representative Peter DeFazio.
Hello.
Hi, go ahead.
My basic question is concerning the ONC lands and how do we raise the tax on the timber companies?
Okay, a couple things at a time here. Let's talk about the ONC lands first. You have a bill that actually did pass the House, I believe, but it's stuck in committee in the Senate. Is that right?
Yeah, well, that was the best I could do in the House, as I said many, many times. Not the bill I would have written, but we needed to come to a compromise. Myself, Greg Walden, Kurt Schrader, move a bill out. Senator Wyden said about a year ago that approach will not work in the Senate, but it has provoked the Senate to consider action, the fact that the House did pass a bill. Senator Wyden is working on his fifth or sixth draft of a bill. My staff, the governor's staff, are working with his staff trying to meet common objectives. That is a sustainable supply of timber that will provide revenues to the counties for essential services like law enforcement, a bill that will provide protection for over 1 million acres of old growth, which currently has no legislative protection and is a one court decision pending in Washington, D.C., away from being on the chopping block. Create a wilderness around the rogue and provide some certainty for the future using scientifically based management based on the work of Norm Johnson and Jerry Franklin. So we haven't gotten there yet, but we've got common objectives and we're still working on it. On the issue of, he just referred back, I thought I explained it pretty simply. It's the state that sets severance taxes. I'm proposing the state have a severance tax that's higher, but then rebate the amount to people who sell the logs into domestic manufacturing to encourage domestic manufacturing instead of raw log exports. That state Senate, state House, and the governor are in charge of that.
All right, so push for the folks at the state legislative level for sure. Let's go to Pam and Dexter. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. Peter DeFazio is running for re-election to Congress.
Hi. Well, Peter, Mr. DeFazio, I'm aware that you're very concerned about climate change, and I know there's not a lot of support from the public, not a lot of awareness about it. But I also know that our forests here in the Pacific Northwest are one of the top 10 carbon sequestering forests in the world. So while you're on one hand, you're for action on climate change, on the other hand, you're working on this ONC bill, which is planning to cut 1.5 million acres of some of the best forests we have in Western Oregon. And I just think we should be really educating the public about the climate crisis and talking about a carbon tax. And I also know that you take political donations from the timber industry, so I would like to know how you could be concerned about climate change and then talk about a sustainable future and then want to clear-cut 1.5 million acres.
All right, thanks for that.
Now the radio next.
First of all, is clear-cut a fair term, Representative DeFazio?
No, absolutely not. That is what a couple of the advocacy groups have put on billboards, including Ron Wyden, myself, and the governor being timber beasts who want to clear cut 1.5 million acres. Under the proposal, you would be setting aside more than 1 million acres of old growth, much of which, under the Clinton Forest Plan, which I opposed, is scheduled for future harvest. It's only being held up by administrative rules, appeals, and litigation, and there's a case pending in Washington, D.C. in the circuit court, which may mandate that the Clinton Forest Plan levels and the harvest of old growth go forward. This bill would stop that. But some people are short-sighted and they don't and won't think that's a problem until the judge rules the other way. I've been trying to solve the problem for two decades. We want to set aside the irreplaceable old growth. This bill does that. We want to use scientifically based management, and we want to restore previously managed, mismanaged forests back to health. And that's what Franklin Johnson do. The rarest form of forest in western Oregon is early seral stage. The industry uses massive herbicides and pesticides, so they don't have what's called early seral. That is the kind of brushy-looking areas after a natural disturbance. We don't allow a lot of natural disturbances because we repress fire, and we have to repress fire now because the forests are so dense and we're so populated. So there's a way to mimic nature using Franklin Johnson forestry by doing openings in the forest. It is far from clear cutting. And of the million, out of the 2.5 million acres would be slightly over a million that would be available. Younger stands for harvest over 100 years, it would be about 1% a year where there would be harvest, and it wouldn't be clear cut harvest. So the 1.5 million acres clear cut is absurd.
All right, the Jordan Cove LNG project and pipeline, and I apologize, we only have about a minute left. Your position's a little tough to suss out here. Where do you stand?
I'm very concerned about people who own property on the pipeline. I'm concerned that in the aggregate we may start exporting so much LNG that we end up with what's the so-called world price, and we lose our advantage there. Natural gas can be a bridge fuel if we start capturing the methane and start drilling the wells safely and in places where it's appropriate and not inappropriately in some other areas with some regulations. Republicans are opposed to all regulations on fracking on federal lands, let alone on state lands. So that's an ongoing fight.
Representative Peter DeFazio represents Oregon's 4th Congressional District, is running for his 15th term. The election is November 4th. Registration deadline next Tuesday the 14th. Representative DeFazio, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Good to have you. Art Robinson will join us on October 17th, a week from tomorrow, so we can hear the other side of this race. Thanks for listening to the Jefferson Exchange.